webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say I'm loud, say I'm clear, for the whole wide world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 26th of September 2013, coming from our studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, and from Houston, Texas. Please welcome from the Gospel Revolution headquarters our founder and president, Michael Williams.
Good morning, Barris Bartlett.
It is a fantastic morning, mate. What could be better? The sun's shining, God's in his heaven, and I'm getting to talk. Well, actually, God's in us, but anyway, I'm getting to talk with me best mate.
And here we are into the fourth day of spring.
Well, oh, that's right. Yeah, it's different here. For those of you who are overseas, America does it differently. They do it on the 21st. For people in the other parts of the world, I'm pretty sure it's the 1st of September.
Yeah, well, I'm not real sure what in the world you're talking about.
The advent of fall, silly.
Fall comes when fall comes, not when people decide. This is fall. Everything is determined by American measurements. You know that.
Yeah, the British have a gallon, and you got a different gallon. I mean, like an entirely different gallon. And metric? Oh, we don't even want to know about that, do we, mate?
No, I think we need to recover this conversation immediately.
So stick around where we say religion is the masterpiece of animal training, for it trains people as to how they should think. And that was by Arthur Schopenhauer. See how I speak German fluently, Michael?
That Arthur.
Gospel, gospel, gospel revolution.
Hey, Mike, did you have an interesting week?
I did have an interesting week.
Okay, let me tell you about mine then.
No. This is the one time I actually knew exactly what I wanted to say. So you're not robbing me of this today.
Tough. We got
a
pledge drive, and we don't have time.
Wait.
Hang on. Let me just check. Oh, that's right. It's your name on the check, isn't it, mate? This is a Mike Williams show. Okay, go for it.
And right after I finish, I promise I will ask you, did anything interesting happen to you this week? All right? Agreed?
Mate, I got a mind the size of a planet, and no one ever asks me that. Oh, so boring.
This week, we started getting some email from the Facebook page from a gentleman who was saying that he lives close to me. He attends a church in the Houston area, the greater Houston area. And he said that his pastor called him aside and almost kind of like the in the brown paper bag and, you know, passed it his way from behind him to behind the other guy. And he said, here, this is for you and for you only. And I understand by the questions you're asking that you have got to have this. Guess what it was, Barris?
Gospel 101?
It was my book.
Oh, man. Passed in a plain brown paper wrapper. That is too funny, mate. Tell us more. Wow.
Now, I added the brown paper wrapper. I did say as, though. All right. But anyway, he did pass it to him, and it was in this fashion. And he also was instructed to, you know, kind of keep it hush-hush.
Mm.
So I love being contraband. After a couple of communications through Facebook, we made contact. It was obvious that this gentleman wanted to meet soon, so we did. He has never listened to a PowerCast. He didn't know where the website was. He told me that 2 years ago he woke up and he said, I don't know where it came from. I don't know what it was, but I knew when I woke up that I am not a Christian.
Wow.
Yes. Now, his conversion experience is a very powerful story, and he's a wonderful young man. And I think the realization that there's an entire world out there of the persuasions that he has come to in his own heart, at this point, I think is just almost overwhelming for him.
But when you're coming to this place, isn't it just like going, ah?
It really is. Actually, I did meet his pastor also about a year ago with two other people. One was a broadcaster, a pastor, and a mother of two, I think.
Or walk into a bar.
Yeah. Don't remember if it was the broadcaster or the pastor that I was sitting with at this restaurant just 5 minutes from my house with this girl. One of them just stopped in the middle of conversation and said, I love you. He was sitting back just staring at me, and he just said, I love you. I mean, it was like one of those crazy moments. It's like where somebody blurts something out in the middle of something that they, you know, that just doesn't fit at the moment. And everybody got a big kick out of it. And he started explaining. He said, the words that come out of your mouth, he said, it's just, I can't describe what is happening inside when you speak. I could only hope that that would happen every time that I would speak. I would be a very loved man if that were true.
Be very rich too, buddy. Well, you said you were going to throw it back to me, and you didn't. I knew it would happen.
Hey, Barris.
Yes, Michael.
Did anything interesting happen in your week this week?
Oh, man, I can't believe you asked. Yes, it did. It was hugely interesting. You know,
How incidental is that?
You know, with a mind the size of a planet, there's very few people I can actually interact with that I enjoy. And so I have all this knowledge, and no one cares for it anymore, mate. You know, I've got things locked away in me that you would think I could get paid for. For example, I know how many pounds, shillings, and pence it takes to make so many dollars. I know how many tons it makes to make one ton. I know how many yards are in a meter, and no one wants to pay me for this information. I'm a repository of almost all human knowledge, mate. Can you imagine how lonely I am? Anyway,
you're getting lonelier and lonelier as we go.
Yeah, that's why I got a BB gun. Hey, I got the neighbor's dog yesterday, mate. He won't be in my yard for a while. I'm telling you, dropping his little calling cards. Yeah, a little chihuahua. I'd like to stick it between two pieces of bread and call him a sandwich, frankly, but I don't think the
No.
Anyway, here's what happened. I've been spending some time on on another website. That's right. I have been being unfaithful to you, buddy. And
I can't believe it.
I know. It's hard to believe. I can hardly believe it myself. Yeah.
That's what they all say.
On this other website, I was strongly putting the thoughts out there for redemption, the redemption of the world. I've encountered legalism before, but, mate, this was more than legalism. This was, I don't even know the word to to put there, that it was a mixture of ignorance and arrogance. And in the end, I just came away with this thought, don't try to light wet wood.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't try to light wet wood. And I know that a couple of the GRs were doing the same as me on this actual site, and I've just come to the conclusion, more and more your words rang true to me, mate. If you don't have a question.
I don't have an answer.
Yeah. I've only got so much energy. I've only got so much time on this planet. Why am I trying to light wet wood?
Mm-hmm.
Why bother?
Did you run into any hostility?
Oh, are you kidding? This particular group, and every other legalist group is exactly the same. They've raised ridicule and gibberish to an art form. They've made an Olympic event out of it.
It's usually an ingredient that goes along with those things, that's for sure. It's the need to be hostile.
Well, here is the scary thing, Michael. I found myself wanting to be hostile. I found mm-hmm. myself wanting to be less than courteous. I found myself wanting to be, well, let me just stick it up your nose then and show you a thing or two. And suddenly I realized I wasn't the person I liked very much.
You know, that's a wonderful observation, Barris. I think that's a tremendous thing about the gospel. It's not that you always act and do the right thing once you understand the gospel. But one thing that I have consistently been able to see in people's lives and experience in my own life, I may be the very same guy and want to react the way that I always did, but I know that that's not the me that I like. I think one of the biggest reasons that I have backed away from trying to answer questions that are not asked is just for that reason. I don't want to be turned into something that I choose not to be, but you do want to get caught up in it. And it's nice to stay away from it. Goodness gracious, if that's what people want to do, that's great. But we have a gospel that is so incredible that pastors are sneaking books to people
that is
of
so
their
hard.
Own congregation.
That is
and
so hard. You reminded me of a story. There was a story about a guy who said to his buddy, he said, "You're not going to believe what happened to me today." And his mate says, "Well, what happened to you?" And he says, "Well, I was walking into a hotel. And as I was walking in, another guy walked out, and you know how they say that every one of us have got an exact double?" The other fellow says, "Yes." He said, "This guy had to be my exact double. It was like looking into a mirror." And the other guy says, "Wow, what happened when you spoke to him?" And he said, "I didn't want to speak to him. I didn't like the looks of him."
Gospel Revolution.
We've started on a series that I called Politics, Pagans, Parasites and Pirates, or if you like, Profiteers. And we started this series last week where we dealt with politics. And the series is about how the gospel compares with Christianity. Not how gospel revolutionaries compare with Christians, but how the gospel of grace and peace, the redemption of the world, compares with Christianity. And we started off by naming a number of statistics regarding the results of Christianity. And then we drew some very stark contrasts between the gospel and Christianity, and we want to continue that this week as we go from politics to pagans. I thought Christianity had to do with Christ. So what has it got to do with pagans? We're going to explore that later in the show. But for right now, we're going to start with this word out of the New Testament, and it's called ekklesia.
Mm-hmm.
Ekklesia is a Greek word. And we use it still today, ecclesiastical, meaning to do with the church. And it was a common Greek term. When there was a town hall meeting in a Greek city and they wanted to, separate out the soldiers from the non-soldiers or the women from the men, they'd simply say to the women, "Stand over here," and the men, "Stand over there." And that was called a calling out. Ek, out of, klesia, to call. It was a public calling out of people. This was taken into the New Testament by Paul, who called it an ecclesia, the body of Christ. Michael, help us understand this, will you, mate?
Yes, Barris, I think it's very important for us to understand the difference between Christianity and the church. These are not the same animal whatsoever. Big differences here. They don't seem to be different until you start looking at the terminology and how the people that use them actually define those things. The church is the church is the church is the church. But let me also say Christianity is Christianity is Christianity is Christianity. So what I want to do in this show with your help is to show that the criticism here belongs on Christianity. The criticism does not belong on church.
You just reminded me of something. One church historian said this: Christianity came to rescue us from religion, and in so doing became a religion.
Yes, it absolutely did. And only the gospel now can save us from all religions, including Christianity. And in doing so, it is imperative, in my view, that we reclaim these terms and not allow them to be sold down the river as just so much trash again. And then we have no place when it comes to dealing with people about scriptural and biblical terms. We have no place to stand because we have piled on with Christianity, with the terms that they have redefined. They call the church all of these denominations. And I'm sorry, that is not the church. The church is universal in that it is everyone is included. That is what the understanding and the teaching in Paul's writings about the church is. We're going to bring out a lot of things, I think, that will leave you happy about the church. A few of them are very, very familiar to us, and we're going to stay in Ephesians. Ephesians is probably the framework in which Paul really puts out his understanding of the term church. First time he brings it up is in Ephesians chapter 1, which, my goodness, Ephesians is so very powerful about this redemption of the entire world is what this chapter is about. And in Ephesians chapter 1, start at 18, the eyes of your understanding being enlightened that you might know what is the hope of his calling. Oh my, see, this is the reason it's hard for me to get through this because I remember the first time that it settled into me that my whole enlightenment was about the hope of his calling, not my calling. And in Christianity, they all placed it on my calling. What is your calling? What is your calling? I don't know. People say I'm called to be a teacher. I don't know. People say that I'm chosen. I don't know. I refuse to go there because I want to be enlightened based on the hope of his calling, yeah, not mine. And what the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints. They all wanted to tell me about my inheritance. And here I am reading through this, and not only is it not my calling, it's his calling where my hope is. And also the riches is not in my inheritance, it's in his inheritance. And then he says, in the saints. His inheritance is where? It's his calling. It's his inheritance. And where is it? It's in the saints. I begin to feel a little special along the line. But this, the amazing thing about feeling special on gospel principles is it elevates you not one iota above anyone else, but it refuses to allow you to sink beneath anyone else.
How about that?
It is just, it's that and a bag of chips and peaches too. So, and what is the exceeding greatness of his power to usward who believe according to the working of his mighty power? You see, if I'm going to believe anything, it has to be what he has accomplished, not what I do. We talked about faith, I think, on our last session. Christianity teaches that faith is the element that you use to empower God. The gospel teaches that faith is the element that God has used to empower us. And this is according to the working of his mighty power, which he wrought in Christ when he raised him from the dead and set him at his own right hand in heavenly places, far above all principalities and powers and mights and dominions and every name that is named, not only in this world, but also in that which is to come. And hath put all things under his feet and gave him to be head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him that filleth all in all.
Michael, can I read that to you in the Greek? And has put, past tense, all, Christianity wants to make all some, or all many, or all anything but all. He has put, past tense, everything, absolutely everything, nothing left out, under his feet, Christ's feet, and gave him, seizure, That word head means to seize, to forcibly seize, and gave him seizure over the same all, everything, nothing left out.
Mm-hmm. This is just too powerful. I can't read that and then have a sermon on what's wrong with the church. You see what I mean?
I hear you. Yeah.
I can't read this and then tell you what is wrong with righteousness. I can't read these powerful insights and tell you. I can't do a teaching on sin and tell you what we got to do about it. It's all been done about it. Then the King James Version says, and hath put all things, the term things is italicized.
Not in the original.
That's not there in the original. He has put all under his feet. Let me also say that when I went into studying this, of course, I was a certified by many called the America's foremost authority on demonology. So these terms, principalities, powers, mights, and dominions, were very important in demonology. But as I went through them and studied them these many, many years ago, I found out that this is not spirits. These are people that Paul is referring to here. Principalities and powers. A principality is a position that a man holds. All of these things. He's talking about where's the verse where he says that neither might nor power, principalities nor powers, anything shall be able to separate us from the love of God.
Romans 8?
Yes.
Around 30 something? Yep.
And all of those we assume to be spirit. Let me assure you that none of these terms are spirit world terms. These terms are people terms having positions in religious authority who are trying to separate us from the love of God. You could basically say elders, deacons, popes, nobody.
This is borne out by the context. If you read back where you were in verse 20, he set him at his own right hand in the heavenly, in heavenlies, actually is the word, not heavenly places, in heavenlies, far above all principality and power and might and dominion. Now, if principality, power, might and dominion were actually spiritual entities, heavenly entities, and heavenlies doesn't mean in heaven. It doesn't mean godly. It means heavenly. It means non-earthly. But yes, if principalities and powers and might and dominion and every name that is named, if that was a spiritual entity, then the context doesn't support that.
Very good thing to point out, Barris. Thank you. It is non-heavenly. We know that because we've been placed in heavenly far above the non-heavenly. It is the only way that you can read this. And these non-heavenly entities are non-spiritual entities. These are people. When Paul was dealing with trying to share the gospel, it was people entities who constantly tried to stop him. Mayors, governors. So he has put all under his feet. Not only is all under his feet, but all that is under his feet, he is the head of all to the church. So to the exclusion of these is to the inclusion of them in the final analysis of what Christ is head of and in all, which is his body, the fullness of him that filleth all in all.
So far above all principality and power and might and dominion, above every name that's named, and has put all under his feet,
mm-hmm.
which is his body.
Yes.
The same all.
The same all, the same group. The gospel just leaves no one out.
And he didn't just put all. He actually gave, you know, when the sheriff comes to your house and nails something to the door and says, I'm seizing this house. That's the word that's used. He didn't just give it to him. He gave him seizure over it.
Absolutely. So it's good news. So I wanted to explain, and we're going to touch on a couple of other things in Ephesians about why is this important. I don't want to just bicker about words, but words mean something, and we want you to know what the word church means. At the same time, I'm not going to nail people to the wall every time they use the term church inappropriately. I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. But when it comes to establishing terminology, folks, we cannot surrender this ground. Because when it comes down to having to debate these issues with this planet, We cannot surrender this terminology to Christianity and then debate the term church with them. They've won the debate by framing the definition of the word.
What do they say? A straight line is the what is that about?
Shortest distance between two points.
There you go. Shortest distance between two points I ever found with this, Michael, and I know that you're leading up to this. Shouldn't steal your thunder, but it was simply this. How can you go to church when you are the church?
Mm-hmm. This is exactly true. And even when Paul talked about the gathering of the church in Ephesus, or the church here or the church there, he wasn't talking about them going to a building. He was just saying the called out ones are getting together in one place. It's not the place, was never the emphasis of the church at Ephesus. That worked out really good, didn't it? So I'm easily entertained, Barris.
I know you think you understand what you thought I said, but I imagine that you appreciate that you don't know what that I said was. Yeah.
If you're talking with me and you say the church is really off base when they say this or that, I know what you're saying, and I'm not going to interrupt and correct you when you say that. Between you and I, that's fine. But I think it is important that we begin to correct this mistaken identity of the church with Christianity. The church is not Christianity, and the Christianity is not the church. In the very same equation that the gospel is not Christianity, and Christianity is not the gospel. This is why that we are taking the time to go into these terms.
What else does Paul have to say about this this word church, mate?
I'm glad you asked, Barris. In Ephesians chapter, we're like a well-oiled machine. I'm not sure what kind of machine, but it's a machine for sure.
Anyone would think we'd rehearse this.
You would think. Ephesians chapter 3, of course, you begin to see that this is Paul's understanding of the church is wrapped up in the book of Ephesians here. He is speaking about his role in sharing this gospel. He says, verse 6, that the Gentiles should be fellow heirs of the same body and partakers of his promise in Christ by the gospel. He's saying this is what the gospel says. Even the Gentiles are included. The gospel says that we're all fellow heirs in Christ. We are all partakers. We are all partakers. Whereof I was made a minister according to the gift of the grace of God given unto me by the effectual working of his power unto me, who am less than the least of all saints, is this grace given, that I should preach among the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ. So Paul's saying, even being the least of the least of all of the saints, I'm equal with everybody else nonetheless. Whether we're talking about Jews or Gentiles, I don't deserve this, Paul is saying. I do not deserve to even be able to have this powerful gospel come out of my mouth. But since all things are equal, here I am. And then he says, and to make all see. Now, the term men is italicized. And to make all see. Now, all are it. All are the church. All are the inheritance of Christ himself. Now, he says, the preaching of this gospel is designed to make all see what is the fellowship of the mystery, which from the beginning of the world hath been hidden in God, who created all things by Christ, to the intent that now unto principalities and powers, remember what we said about principalities and powers, in heavenly might be known by the church, the manifold wisdom of God.
To the intent that now these same principalities and powers and names above all of that that he mentioned in chapter 1, mm-hmm. Now they're in heavenlies. Woo-hoo.
Regardless of where they are.
Okay.
Heavenly, earthly, it makes no difference. This is the seizure that is talked about. Barris, Jesus is called Lord of heaven and earth for a reason. His redemptive power did not just cleanse earth, it cleansed heaven. We'll go into that sometime. Jesus is Lord of heaven and earth. God was just as happy to get heaven straightened out as he was to get earth straightened out through the powerful sacrifice of the work of Christ.
I guess if sin started in heaven, I mean, Lucifer was in heaven, wouldn't he?
Exactly. This is the full picture of this, is that Jesus went back and cleansed the very origins of sin itself, which did start in heaven. It's a powerful understanding. I've never found it in any Christian doctrine whatsoever. But he says that the preaching of the gospel, this is why we do what we do. This is why we took your money this past month, that it might be known by the church, the manifold wisdom of God, according to the eternal purpose, which he purposed in Christ Jesus, our Lord.
Well, hang on. If it was an eternal purpose, then we're not living in plan B. We're living in plan A.
I don't care what plan you call it. The fact of it is A, B, C, and D has all been covered by Christ.
I'm having fun with you, aren't I?
You are. You are so dastardly.
Oh, for sure. Many's the time I've been called a little dastard.
So we have this eternal purpose that has been fulfilled in Christ, in God, which is all. I mean, how many different ways can you say it? Really? Now, what is this great mystery? How is this mystery of the church most manifested? What can I say to get everyone on this planet to understand what the church is? What can we say to get this wisdom across to people? And this is where Paul comes up with this marriage comparison. Now, this is what this is built up to. This is where he comes from in Ephesians chapter 1 and in Ephesians chapter 3. And now Paul is about to go into his definition of marriage.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family.
How goes the pledge drive, Michael?
It's going very well. We want to finish very strongly. We've paid off all the debts last year. That was over $40,000 that we were able to cut through. We went through absolute decline. I wound up homeless the whole nine yards. We didn't declare bankruptcy. And last year, we recovered from all of that. From that point, that we will be stronger to be able to reach out and help others. We did an email from Moses, and it's very hard. Jeff told me that when he read it, he said it was, when he read the email, he said it was like somebody had punched him in the gut.
I have it up in front of me now, and I'm just having the same reaction right now.
In the email, one of the things that made it so very difficult to read is that Moses decided to sell some of his own personal property, property that is not easily replaced there in Kenya. And as he was describing to me what he had done, he said that out of that, he took half of the sale of his own personal property, and he bought a month's radio time for the Gospel Revolution. I am having to say this as a robot right now because I can't take it. But this is what we have in the Gospel Revolution. All of you guys are just like Moses. All of you would do what he did. I don't know of any of you that would not do the same if pressed to the point to where that you knew it was the difference between people hearing and not hearing the gospel. Let me tell you something. The Gata family loves Kenya, and they want the gospel in Kenya. They want the gospel in all of Africa more than they want anything, and they have proven that.
Well, can I just read from this email?
Yes, please.
He mentions that after the sale of his personal property, and as you said, this is not property which is easily gotten in Kenya, he has bought himself 1 month on the air. And this is what he says. I am happy we're on the air again from this source. And for sure, thousands, if not millions, are already being reached by the gospel. As a matter of fact, today I have received so many calls from listeners asking for your teachings, CDs, and other materials, and your book One. It's working, Mike. Here is a man who puts his money where his mouth is. Did you know he was going to send you this email? I mean, did he say, hey, Mike, I need a hand or anything?
No.
He just dipped his hand in his own pocket, sold his own property,
yeah,
and got this on the air. family, anything extra that Michael or I added to that would be just, it would just be redundant. If you don't know where our hearts are here, that's okay. But I know that many of you do. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so very much. I found it odd what came out of my mouth in talking with a couple of our contributors, actually. And I said, you know, I said, we'll make you proud.
Yeah.
And there's some of you that have seen this whole ministry through homelessness and loss and debt, and you've been there. And I don't even really know what to say. But let me say to all of you who did give in this pledge drive, and if you've ever put one penny into this ministry, let me guarantee you one thing. We're going to make you proud. We're going to make you proud of where you put your money. We're going to make you proud of what you've done with your hard-earned dollars. I do not take that lightly at all. We do not feel we are deserving on any level of your hard-earned dollars because we are somehow special. But the one thing that we do think is special is the gospel. And when I hear that Moses has gone to this point, somebody that is like family to me already. So thank you. Goodness gracious. I don't know what else to say. It's like Vera said, there's not anything we can add to it whatsoever. But this radio show has power to reach 90% of all of Kenya. It reaches into Somalia. It reaches into two other countries on the west and the north sides of Kenya. And this is not a Christian radio station. This is a regular radio station. It is the radio station that people listen to. Not only does this go out in my voice, but it is then rebroadcast by Moses Media School, which he owns and operates there.
Family, what you've just heard, Moses took his own personal property and sold it. I think it was last week we told you what it was going to cost to actually buy a month on the air there. I think it was $2,700. If Moses has taken his own property and he's sold enough to fund $2,700 investment in the gospel in a country where the per capita income per annum is $530. Really? Do we need to say more?
Thank you, Moses. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Richie. Thank you, Joshua.
Hi, Barris. This is Rhonda Liskey. I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was raised in a fundamentalist Christian church and home. From early childhood, I was introduced to a God with a split personality. He was an unconditionally loving God on one hand, but over on the other hand, he had conditions for me to meet in order to obtain his favor. Throughout my Christian experience, I would get glimpses of the gospel, only to have them snatched away with teachings that condemned me. I remember seeing these contradictions from a very early age, but whenever I questioned them, I was shut down with a trite answer or an outright disapproving, "You're being the devil's advocate, Rhonda. Stop it." I learned quickly to keep my concerns to myself and to not rock the boat. I became a good little Christian so I could win the approval of my family, my church, but more importantly, so I could earn the approval of my Heavenly Father. My Christian experience was a roller coaster ride, up when I felt I was doing all I needed to do, and down when I felt I was failing to win God's approval. I know that this is the typical Christian experience, and most people coming out of religion know what I'm talking about. The constant vacillating between self-righteousness and condemnation was a mental anguish that I would not wish on my worst enemy. But instead of walking away from the cause of this mental anguish to get relief, I pushed further into it, thinking that if I only dedicated myself more to God, then this turmoil would stop. So I decided that I needed to serve God on the mission field. I enrolled in a Bible college in Australia to get training for a life as a missionary. I arrived in Australia 2 weeks shy of my 18th birthday. I was on a high because I thought this is going to be the answer to finding intimacy and acceptance with God. But 2 weeks later, on my birthday, I was brutally raped. I spent over 2.5 weeks in the hospital recovering. My high had come crashing down around me, and I never felt such condemnation in all my life. I couldn't wrap my mind around why this had happened to me, when I was trying so hard to follow God's plan for my life. I found little comfort in my belief system or my God. I decided to not tell my parents what had happened to me, telling myself that I wanted to save them from the hurt of it all. But looking back, I wonder if my choice to not tell them was because I was afraid they would judge me. After all, how could I expect them not to judge me when I was judging myself? During the next 2 months, I struggled with the question of why. What had I done to deserve this? It was at this time that I found out I was pregnant from the rape. For the first time in my life, I got angry with God, and I started to blame him. At first, I felt like I was going to be struck by lightning for daring to shake my fist at God. For months, as I lashed out at God, he started reminding me of all of the glimpses of the gospel I had had seen through the years. These glimpses felt like a shower on a dry and thirsty soul. For the first time in my life, I was starting to see how I was accepted and loved by God apart from my performance. I stopped many of the things that I had been taught that I needed to do to be close to God. But here I was, never feeling more unconditionally loved by him or closer to him. I still struggled with condemnation. Duh, I was still attending Bible college. Of course, I would struggle with condemnation. I heard it every day. And thinking that I must have done something to deserve my circumstances, I struggled with that also. But overall, I was starting to understand the truth. I was over 7 months pregnant when an evangelist visited the church that I was assigned to by the college. After the service, this man came up to me and said that he needed to speak to me, and could he take me out for lunch the next day. I was a little surprised because I'd never met this man before, but I agreed. At the restaurant, before the waitress could even bring our drink order, he opened up by telling me that the pastor and he had a talk about me and that he knew my situation. He then proceeded to tell me that God had spoken to him and that he knew why I'd been raped and had gotten pregnant. He said that I had sinned against God and that this was my punishment. He went on to tell me that he knew that I was planning to give the babies up for adoption. I was having twins, but that was not God's plan for me, that I needed to, as he put it, take my lumps and raise the babies myself. I was shocked, and I didn't know what to say. I had been taught my whole life to never question a man of God. I went away from that meeting reeling. When I got back to the dorm, I started to weep. I felt crushed once again under the weight of God's disapproval. But then the thought came to me, Rhonda, why would you choose to serve a God that would use rape to punish you? In a moment of what I can only describe as crystal clarity, I thought, I wouldn't. I would not choose to serve a God like that. I recalled how God had been showing me how he loved and accepted me without any strings attached the last few months. Something inside me said, Rhonda, you have listened your whole life to what others have told you who God is. But now you need to start letting God show you who he is. So I stopped doing all the things I had been taught to do in order to find favor with God. So I stopped, and the most amazing thing started to happen. I started to literally see God in everything and everyone around me. All of my life, I'd been told that darkness needed to be separated from light, that I needed to disassociate myself from unbelievers so I would not become tainted. But for the first time in my life, I truly felt fellowship with others, and they were non-believers. I think looking back at this, that I was able to see this oneness and this unity of all people once I had been able to accept the oneness and unity I myself had with God apart from works. It was years later that I was introduced to Mike Williams and to his ministry, and it showed me in Scripture, finally, what my heart had already known for years. What has the gospel meant to me? It has meant the end of mental turmoil over how God views me. It has ended a life that was enslaved to self-righteousness and to condemnation. It has freed me to accept all people for who they are and to know that they are redeemed of the Lord. It has freed me from the idea that when life stinks, that it has to do with God, that it has to do with how God feels about me. It has freed me from that. It has freed me to forgive what I once thought was unforgivable and to make peace with my past. I have been freed to be with and marry the man of my dreams without fear of what the religious world or anyone else thinks. I am free to raise my child to be himself, not some carbon copy of what someone else thinks he needs to be. Finally, I am free to be myself and to live my life the way it was meant to be lived, free for freedom's sake. Thank you.
I have on the line Jeffrey Robertson, administrator extraordinaire from his holiday home in Florida. And he's got some interesting things to tell us. What have you got to tell us, buddy?
Well, just wanted to update everybody on the pledge drive. We've had a few more people who have donated, and some of them are pretty interesting. So I will I'll let you know who the new people are. And I really want to start off with Robert and Stacy Clark in Stevens City, Virginia.
Are they new people?
As far as I remember, I've never gotten to speak to these folks, but they became monthly donors. They've pledged a monthly pledge, and I got an email from them. And, you know, it just made me feel good all over because I heard from somebody who I didn't know they were listening to the PowerCast. I got an email. Let me just read it. I just committed through PayPal to a such and such dollar per month contribution. Please include in your records that this monthly gift is from Robert and Stacy Clark. We are diehard listeners of the podcast, and our lives have been greatly affected by the gospel of peace and grace. Thanks so much for all you're doing, Robert and Stacy Clark in Stevens City, Virginia. Thank you, Robert and Stacy, and thank you for becoming a monthly pledge.
Thank you, Robert and Stacy. Yeah.
Then we've got a dear lady in Atoka, Oklahoma. And her name is Betty Cochran, and she's been a dear lady who's been supporting us monthly for nigh on 15 years.
Wow.
And
that's
she
loyal,
just
isn't
sent
it?
In a pledge. Then we've got another longtime friend, Bran Dillard. He's in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Bran is a neat guy. He's not a listener, by the way. And I don't even think he gets our newsletter anymore, but occasionally he sends in a pledge. All right, and here's a beautiful couple from North Battleford, Saskatchewan in Canada. It's Gordon and Laverne Elias, and they have been with Mike since 1988 through the end of his Word of Faith days when he was really getting into the grace message. And back in 1994, I think it was, or 97, when they had heard that Mike had come to the conclusion that the entire world was redeemed, Gordon immediately took to it, and he's like, yes, that's got to be true. Laverne is like, oh, no, he went too far. But eventually Laverne, you know, reasoned it out in her own head, and lovely people, really lovely people. And they've sent in a pledge. This is the first time they've actually been on one of our pledge drives. They are supporters, but they've never given to a pledge drive before. And then here's another wonderful couple. They just got married last Saturday. And they planned the wedding for a whole year, built up all the stress. I talked to her the day before the wedding, and they still had all the stuff they were getting together. And, you know, they said, you know, we planned this wedding for a whole year and all the work that went into it, and it was over in 15 minutes.
So they had a wedding and gave us a present.
And they gave us a present.
Oh,
yes, they did.
Sweet.
It's Daryl and Lana Jose. Congratulations, Daryl and Lana.
Yeah, congratulations, guys.
And they are from Red Deer, Alberta.
Remember this, guys. Wedding cake is the only cake, apparently, that can give you indigestion 15 years later. But anyway, congratulations.
Okay. All right. Here are the Howls from Monongahela, Pennsylvania. They've been with us for a long time, and they came to our conventions when we first started our annual conventions. George is actually with us a lot on Facebook, and busy people. They throw great Labor Day parties and Memorial Day parties, and just wonderful folks. So, Gio, I hope all is going well with you. And next on our list is Brad and Gloria Matoga. They're from Grassland, Alberta.
Did you say Grassland?
Yeah, Grassland.
You North Americans have, I mean, like, what odd names you pick. Grassland. I mean, a lot of thought went into that, right? I bet you've got a Treesville and a Lakesville and a Stoneville or something like that, haven't you?
You've got to understand, Alberta is like one quarter the size of Australia, and it's mostly desert. So when you find some grass, you name it.
Oh, okay. I get it now, mate. Sorry, Canada?
Yeah, that's Canada. And then here's a wonderful, wonderful couple. Can't say enough about them. Don and Judy Murphy. Up until just a little over a year ago, they were duplicating all of our older CDs for us. About 20 different series, actually. But Don has been a wonderful guy, and he's gone through a lot health-wise, and he keeps coming out strong. He's had his hips replaced and a few other things. And Judy is a wonderful, wonderful lady. She has helped with all this for the years before I came along. They did it for nothing, you know? Not only that, at one time, they were really down on their luck, and it was, I think, the first pledge drive or something. They were so down on their luck, and they sent Mike, well, they sent the ministry $100 when they really didn't have it to give. And these are some of the really true people who just believed in this gospel so much that it had to get out, and they were not going to let it just fall away.
Wow.
So Don and Judy, love you dearly. We love you so much and can't say enough good about you.
And he had a hip replacement, huh?
Two, actually.
Two. Mate, that was like me. Same as me.
Really?
Yeah, I've had two lips replacements. Three wives will do that to you, mate.
They work most of the time. I can hear you. I can make sense of what you're saying. Gosh, the next two names here. Next on our list, as far as contributors to the pledge drive, are Moses, affectionately known as Gachau. Moses and Elizabeth Gata from Nakuru, Kenya. we've included their contribution, of course, on this pledge drive. Got a heart gut-wrenching email from them. They actually sold some personal property to get us back on the air in Kenya for a month, and it cost them over $2,800 US dollars to get us back on the air for a month in Kenya, and they had to sell personal property to do it. And you got to understand, in Kenyan dollars, that's a couple of years of income. So they are the big givers. We have a couple big givers in this pledge drive that we are grateful for, but they are truly the big givers. And it's all because they wanted this gospel to continue to go out on the airwaves in East Africa.
Wow. I know that you won't have heard, Mike and I were just talking about that a minute ago, actually, Jeff, and I know that you weren't able to hear that, but you'll hear when you get this PowerCast later today, you will hear that. You and I know that Michael is never at a loss for words, right? Yeah, well, he is today.
Pretty much.
He is today.
Yeah. Yeah, when I saw the email come through, it felt like a punch to the stomach, really. They've done so much, and they've never been asked to do a thing.
And they've never asked us for anything either.
And they've never asked us for a thing. Yeah. Never. Mm. No.
So this is the last week of the pledge drive. Jeffrey, how would you describe the pledge drive?
It's probably the most unusual pledge drive we've had. Every one of them goes differently. One time, even though we read all these names, typically it's less than 100 people. It's actually typically less than 50 people. Now, we have over 50 people contributing this time. And mind you, we speak to thousands. But it's literally just a little over 100 people who actually keep us on the airwaves and a few other things for these thousands to hear us. But this one was really interesting. The Gatas, hearing from Robert and Stacy Clark, man, that really just warmed my heart to hear from somebody I didn't know was listening by name. I didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
And then a couple others give who don't normally give during pledge drives, but they are great givers. Actually, like the next name I want to read to you, Lee Lao Sung.
Oh, Li Lau from Hong Kong.
Yeah, from Hong Kong. Folks, anyone who's listening today, all of you, all of us, have Li Lau to thank. He's the one who kept this ministry going during our darkest times, and he dug deep to do it. He really did, and for a long time. And Li Lau, in addition to his monthly, gave us a sizable contribution this time. So we're very, very grateful.
Thank you, Li Lau.
Li Lau is from Hong Kong, and he has a two-year-old little girl now named Laurel, and he's busy being a doctor and a daddy. So we love you, Li Lau. I don't know if you're listening. Next, we have Claudia Weldon from Tubac, Arizona. And I don't ever, Claudia, if I'm wrong, please let me know, but I don't ever remember seeing you on a pledge drive before. So thank you. Usually I'm right, but not always, because Danny Miniscanians let me know that he had given a couple times before on other pledge drives.
Good on you, Danny. Good on you, Danny. You, mate, you call Jeff out every time. I love it.
Our last pledge from this past week, our last one is a unique one. It's Mike Williams from Houston, Texas.
What? There's two of them?
No, this is the one and the same. This is our Mike Williams, and he upped his monthly pledge by tenfold. I don't know how he's going to do it, because I know how much he makes, and he doesn't make much. But how he's going to do it, I don't know. But he will do it, but he multiplied his monthly pledge tenfold. So, yeah, good on you, Mike. And we're not asking anybody to do what we don't do ourselves, right?
Exactly.
So that's the new givers from this past week. And I just want to let everybody know the pledge drive, as far as thank you gifts are concerned, if you have a pledge you still want to give, as far as thank you gifts go, all the way through Sunday, let us know online. Give me a call, 321-220-4373. Make your pledge. Thank you gift is the latest series, which is Mystery of Faith.
And that's Jeff Robertson, our administrator extraordinaire, all the way from Coral Sands in Florida. Thanks, Jeff.
All right. I have to correct you again. Cape Coral, Florida.
Folks are dumb where I come from. They ain't had any learning.
Picky, picky, picky. I mean, you guys, I got pretty close. I mean, if you'd have named the darn thing Swampland or Grassland or something, or Stone Mountain, I might have gotten it right.
Why do you think I'm reading the names and the locations now?
I had a lot more fun the other way, pal.
I know, much to my chagrin.
Well, mate, are we going to hear any more from you, or is it just pledge drives?
You know, folks, now that I do a video on YouTube every week, I'll probably come back and make a comment once in a while. How about that?
Love it. Love it. Thank you very much, Jeff Robertson. Talk to you again soon.
All right. Goodbye, Bears.
Bye-bye, mate. Gospel Revolution. Well, hello, Michael Blanch. This is the third week through this pledge drive, and we have had some exciting donations and really, really fantastic response. How the heck are you, Michael Blanch?
You know, I'm actually doing great. Of course, in Minnesota, we have our own colloquial sayings like, oh, could be worse. Yeah. Can't complain. But I'm really excited for real, because I've been talking to Michael and I've been talking to Jeff, and it's really heartening to see people putting their funds where their hearts are and supporting this ministry so that we can reach more people. It's really exciting and powerful.
Michael, let me ask you this question. What single thing did the gospel bring to Michael Blanch that you would like everyone in the world to know and you would like to impact everyone else?
Boy, Barris, there's so many things, but if I had to really zero in, the ability to reach out and make a difference in the lives of everyone that I love. When I was trapped in religion, in that system of rewards and punishment, the knowledge of good and evil, surely if I do good, I'm qualified with God, and surely if I fail, I'm disqualified. And I used to think backsliding was screwing up. Now I know that backsliding is going back under the law and trusting in my own righteousness. And to be able to set aside my self-righteousness on both ends of the spectrum, I'm better than you, or I don't measure up, that is gone. Mm. And I've got more space in my heart to relate to others, even people that I disagree with. I believe that we're connected because I know we are both one in God. And as a result, it creates a space for respect, and it fosters love and connection. And that's how this gospel has changed my life and continues to change my life.
If you were at a restaurant eating and there was a terrorist came in with bombs strapped to his body to blow up the infidels, what would you say to him?
I think we all know that there's a lot of religions out there and they manifest themselves in weird ways. I think religions created a history of martyrs and murders. And I would let this person know that you are a child of God. There's nothing you need to do to be right with God. There's nothing you can do that will qualify you or disqualify you with God. You are one.
You were talking a few weeks back about exponential growth in the next little while. What do you think that will look like, Michael?
Well, it's kind of simple math, I suppose. So let me take a number. Let's just take 1,000 of the people that are in the universe of Mike Williams' ministry. Some of them give, some of them don't. But if everyone just gave a little bit, it would be amazing how that would add up. You know, I give to a lot of things, Bears, and I usually give a one-time donation of $25 here and $36 there to whatever cause I care about. If I want to sustain a cause or a ministry, I prefer to do a small monthly gift.
What, like?
Usually, it's very modest. I'm like, oh, I'll do $10 a month, and it doesn't seem like a lot, but it allows my cause or my nonprofit or a ministry to be able to budget month to month. So if 1,000 people just gave a little bit, you know, I'm just making like $10 a month because it seems very doable. I tell you what, I've blown $10 in a New York Minute on a really bad meal and had regret. I'm like, you know what? This is a better investment than heartburn, right? So I'm like, okay, I'll throw down a little bit here. But that adds up. 1,000 times 10, boom, $10,000 a month. Right? I give a little bit more to things that matter to me. Jeff called me up and said, Michael, would you like to continue to help us sustain our work? I said, of course I would, Jeffrey. You know? And he said, well, what were you thinking about? I'm like, well, why don't you tell me what I'm thinking about? Give me a number.
You threw it back.
And I actually was just going to continue with $10 a month. But then I thought, you know what? I could easily do $30 a month. And like I said, I joke, but a dollar a day keeps guilt and shame away. So I'll remember it. So I chose to do that. It's a easy lift when you break it down on that basis. And it makes a difference. I was reflecting on the power of the testimonials that have been coming in, Barris.
Haven't they been something else?
Oh, you know, life-changing. And it's literally seen a return on your investment.
Mm.
Back in the church days, we used to give a lot of money, but we believed that there was a scorecard with God, and every dollar I gave, I had better standing with God, and every dollar I didn't give, I'd fall short, and punishment was, you know, imminent.
Remember those days.
But this investment is hearts changed, and I love hearing the stories come in, and that's why I want to give a little bit more. So thank you, Jeff, for asking me to double down during this drive. You put the fun in fundraising. Woohoo.
Say goodnight to the nice people, Mr. Michael Blanchard. Thanks so much for joining us this week.
Thank you, Barris. And thank you, everyone that listens to this podcast. Thank you for your generosity. Thank you for everything. And I wish you much love and peace in the days ahead.
Gospel revolution.
What can I say to get everyone on this planet to understand what the church is? What can we say to get this wisdom across to people? And this is where Paul comes up with this marriage comparison. Now, this is what this is built up to. This is where he comes from in Ephesians chapter 1 and in Ephesians chapter 3. And now Paul is about to go into his definition of marriage. He said, we want you to get the wisdom. We want everyone who is the church to understand how you became the church and what that means, because this was a mystery that was hidden. These mysteries were hidden through the scriptures.
In fact, the Greek word for great mystery, great, is mega. This was not just a mystery. This was a mega mystery.
This is a mega mystery. I like that. So this was the mega mystery that Paul is now referring to. What is this mega mystery? Is there a revelation that we can take anybody on planet Earth and cause them to see this mega mystery. Well, Paul goes through and he starts teaching about husbands and wives, and oh my gosh, how many churches, how many wives have been placed in bondage to obey their husbands?
Not enough of mine, mate. Not enough of mine.
Didn't get to yours? Yay, Laura, stay free. So here is the mega mystery. This is really very powerful. Paul goes through all of this about marriage and then comes to this conclusion. Verse 32, this is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church.
Michael, what you're saying is that all of this Ephesians stuff about a husband and his wife, he's not saying in verse 32 of chapter 5, he's not saying that this is a great mystery, but I'm speaking to you concerning husbands and wives. He says, this is a great mystery, but I speak, what I'm really talking about here is Christ and the church.
Yes, absolutely.
This whole thing was to try and explain this mystery, is what I think. Okay.
Now, we started in chapter 1, we're all the way through chapter 5, and Paul has interlaced this powerful understanding about the church all the way through. And he says, now, if you're going to get this mystery, here's how you're going to get it. It comes in understanding marriage. Now, if we're going to understand marriage, we have to understand it from the context of the people that were used on the stage to bring this all about. So I think it would behoove us to look at what a scriptural marriage is. I did a series many years ago on scriptural marriage and scriptural divorce. We need to teach it again. I can't remember the title of the series. So ask Jeff. Ask Jeff about the series I have no name for.
Worry, Jeff. Yeah, ring him up. Ring him up on this number, area code 321-220-4373. That is area code 321-220-4373.
He loves it.
And while you're talking to him, don't forget to make your pledge.
You are so sneaky. Thank you. So if marriage is the key to the mystery,
well, hang on. I thought this was a scriptural description of marriage, what he's just talked about in Ephesians. Isn't that the scriptural definition of marriage?
No, he is talking about marriage as they see it at that time. And then he's saying the mystery is locked up in the whole understanding of marriage. So if we're going to really understand marriage, we've got to understand it in Jewish context. We just cannot go outside that. We have to understand it in Jewish context and not in modern context, but the oldest that the scriptures brings forth. Now, the first thing we have to take with us as we go back and do this, Barris, is that understand that the bride and the bridegroom, what he was talking about here was that it's Christ and all, Christ and everyone, Christ and no one's left out.
What, Christ is a bridegroom and everyone else? Okay.
And every individual that has ever been on earth or ever will be on earth is the all that he is speaking of here. Not all of a certain group, but all is the group. If you go back and read about the type and shadows that come from these stories in the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, which Jeff is really good about, we understand that it actually was the father of the bridegroom who chose the bride for his son. The choice was the father's exclusively. Then the bridegroom would do whatever it took to woo and all of date, or what we'd call date now. But that's what this whole thing through the Old Testament was, is the dating practices of this relationship between Christ and the entire planet. So we find out that the number one thing, there's two things about this marriage, Jewish marriage, that we understand. Number one is that the one who had no choice in the matter at all is the bride. Zero. She had no choice.
That's the all. That's me, you mean?
That's you. That's me. That's everyone that has ever been on this planet. Had no choice.
No one had
a choice.
What about free will?
Free will is a wonderful thing once you know that you're part of the body of Christ.
Okay.
use your free will and exercise it with caution, I might add. But the thing that you don't have to exercise caution about is your free will pertaining to your relationship with God. This is done by someone else for everyone. It is such a powerful revelation.
So the choosing of the bride is done by the father of the bridegroom.
That's what my understanding of the Jewish ritual of marriage in its origins stood as.
Well, what if the girl wanted to wriggle out of it?
There wasn't any such thing. There was no way out of
it. No wriggle room?
This is the true arranged marriage. There was no way out of this. The bride had no choice in this matter whatsoever. There is no wiggle room around it at all. The bride had no choice. So in Christ, the bride has no choice. This is the mega mystery.
So hang on, let me get this. Because
folks are dumb where I come from. They ain't had any learning.
So the father of the bride chooses the bride.
Yes.
The bride got no say in it.
Zero.
What about the groom? Maybe he's got a say in it.
Doesn't seem that even the groom had a say-so in it.
Well, hang on. I remember in the Old Testament that if he didn't like his missus, he could just shunt her off to wherever.
Exactly. Once the union is done, then there are things called divorce laws. So I went back to study the divorce laws.
Here's a wriggle room, mate. Here it is.
And I'm telling you, there's some here. And here you're going to get it. The thing that I found is that the wife, who had no choice to get in the marriage, the wife now in the marriage has no choice to get out. Now, there is one that has a choice to get out, and it's the husband. Barris, it blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
The simplicity of reading about all the reasons that a husband could put away his wife. And not one single law gave the wife the right to put away her husband.
Now, you say this is Christ in the church. Who's to say Christ isn't going to say, I don't like the way you're treating me?
That's where we trust that he is the truth. Because he said, I will never leave you or forsake you. So we've got his word on it. And the one thing that we know that we base all of our understanding about the gospel on, it is the truth of Christ. And the only one who can get out of this marriage is Christ. And he has promised us he will never desert us. He will never, ever get out of this marriage. This is the mega mystery. If Jeff Robertson misses the title of this particular PowerCast, I don't know what I'm going to do with him.
Mate, I've been calling this politics, pagans, parasites, and profiteering, and he hasn't picked up on that. So I don't see why you should get your way.
Well, goodness gracious, what a mega mystery! Totally revealed to us. Every culture around the planet can understand it. There is not a place on earth that arranged marriages did not touch before modern ages that I know of. So through this one revelation, we now have a complete understanding of this one mega mystery, God and man being one. Now, remember, it says that the husband and wife, once this happens, these two shall become one. So God and man has become one. We have literally, in every conceivable way, I believe, become one. I believe it so much, I wrote a book about it.
This reminds me of a verse in Hosea where God is speaking and he says, I will betroth you unto me forever. Yes, I'll betroth you unto me in righteousness, right relationship, judgment, setting things right, and in loving kindness. And in mercies, I will even betroth you to me in faithfulness. And you will know the Lord. Wow. Okay. This is good stuff, mate. This is nothing like I imagined, and I'm loving it.
Man, yeah, just what you've just read, that's just... It's time for a series. I've never connected that prophecy with those verses before.
It's a Hosea. God, it's such a gorgeous story. So marry this girl. Okay, I'll marry her. She's going to be unfaithful to you, by the way. Yeah, sure, I'll marry her. Now she's shot through and she's living with a slave trader and he was pimping her out and now he's got her on the slave block. I want you to go to the slave block and repurchase her. Mm-hmm. it makes you want to cry, you know?
Yeah, the total love.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah, the term to know the Lord.
Yada. Let me guess. Yeah, I didn't.
Is that the one that means to be kin to?
That, well, actually.
Blood related?
Actually, it means to have.
Intimate relation. Okay.
So when Adam knew his wife Eve, the quaint biblical way of putting it is that Adam knew Eve and she conceived and bore a son. Same word, actually, I think by memory, that David is dying, King David's dying, and he has a heart-to-heart with his boy Solomon, and he says, Solomon, do this, that, and the other, but above everything else, get to know your God. Know your God. Yada, your God. Be intimate with God in such a way that is life-giving, that is life-producing. And here he says, and you shall yada me.
And you be an intimate relationship. What a love story. It doesn't get any better than this. However, Christianity turns this love story around. And it is this poor woman who's out seeking the love of the one that she is betrothed to. And she's desperately trying to please him, desperately trying to make it right, desperately trying to get him to choose her, desperately trying to be clean, desperately trying to be white, desperately trying to be without spot, desperately trying to be the chosen one. And this is the mega mystery. No matter how big of a prostitute we were, no matter how much we were on the slave block, no matter how much we betrayed our betrothal, it is he who has carried this out. And he said, we will come to a point of total intimacy with God. Regardless of the choices we've made, we would come to absolute intimacy with God himself. And that was fulfilled at the cross.
I think we get into the show right here, Michael. But I want to, if you'll permit me, I'd like to go back and have a look at a little bit of historical evidence now regarding what is commonly called the church.
Back it up, baby. Back it up.
Gospel Revolution.
There is so much information we want to share today that, honestly, we can't fit it on one PowerCast. So we're going to create a second part to this PowerCast. And in it, I am going to be referencing a lot of Christian historical data. And just in case you don't think it's worth hearing, if you think history's dry, here's a couple of teasers for you. Bishops were excommunicating bishops because some bishops said, what happens if a rat eats the wafer after transubstantiation, or a cockroach, or a dog? What if they lick the wafer up off the ground after it's been turned into the actual flesh of Christ? Does that mean now that Jesus is in a dog? It became that ridiculous. And it became so ridiculous that in those Middle Ages, people realized how ridiculous it was. They would say, when they thought you were doing a bit of sleight of hand, they'd call it hocus pocus. And that word, those words, hocus pocus, come from the Latin hoc est corpus meum. This is my body.
Wow.
Transubstantiation. Even people in what we call the Dark Ages, they even had the sense to get out of the rain on that one. Now, 2 million people every year are leaving the church in America. They're voting with their feet. And by the church, I mean. Now, surveys tell us that. Christian surveys are telling us now that.
They're leaving the what?
Christian surveys are telling us today that 2 million people are leaving Christianity in America each year.
Yay! Why did I have to interrupt you and say, wait. How many people are leaving the what? Because we just find out how many people can leave the church, Barris. Come on, tell me. How many people can leave the church?
I come from, they ain't had any learning.
They can't leave the church because they are the church, and all of the church is in Christ.
Hey, you are one of the most brilliant men I think I know.
No, I'm just like a monkey that just copies tricks, mate. You said it, so I said it.
You've learned my trick then.
So if you miss part two of this podcast, that's only a little bit of what you'll be missing. See you on the other side, family.
Gospel Revolution.